Welcome back to the Wolf of Queen Street podcast series. Welcome back to the next episode. But before we get started today, I just want to shout out to the location we're filming in, Campfire Studios, central part of Auckland, an amazing studio that doesn't just provide these facilities to be able to record the podcast, but also trying to build a community where our message can be shared, can be distributed, and bringing people together that our message through podcasting, content creation, with whatever we're trying to achieve can be put out there in the world. But just a big shout out again to Campfire Studios. But today, Dave Wood from Integrated Training, I saw your video or I saw yourself on the UFC 259 and 263 camps with Izzy about the performance, the breathing, the calmness training that you're doing with himself and his entire fight camp and City Kickboxing. I remember watching on TV and going, that looks amazing. I'm really interested to learn more about it and what you offer to the community and to performance stars, businesses, and everything else out there. So I thought I'd ask you to come over to the show. So Dave, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Stoked to be here.
Awesome. So let's take a bit of a step back first. Where did your path start or getting yourself into where you are today? What was your sort of your education or your past jobs, as people would say?
Yeah, I grew up out at Piha Beach on the west coast here in Auckland. When people ask me where I'm from, I never say Auckland, I say Piha. I'm a Westie. But I grew up out there in that environment, really special place for me. And growing up out there, I was heavily involved in surfing, which I still am, but also surf lifeguarding. Mm-hmm. And I did paid lifeguarding out there for many years. I went on the New Zealand lifeguard exchange over to England and Cornwall. Ended up working over there for like 5 to 6 years, and that's where this the practical experience sort of started molding my practical experience of this stuff, of stress mitigation, and mindset training. And then from there, I sort of came back from overseas. I also did a bunch of traveling. And gained a lot of experience through that, but came back to New Zealand. I didn't really have anything behind me. Mm-hmm. And I was walking down the beach to go for a surf one day, and it came across my mate, and he was telling me about this paramedic degree and how he was on the last year of this degree. And I looked into that, and it was 2 days on, 4 days on, mm-hmm. 4 days off. And instantly I just thought, man, 4 days off, got to go surfing for four days. And so I enrolled the next day in the paramedic degree. It's a 3-year degree in health science. And then I've done 11 years working on the road on a frontline ambulance, on a first response jeep, for many of those years as an intensive care paramedic. And over that time, you are in that job, you're exposed to a lot of stress and pressure. Mm-hmm. You have to make clinical decisions under pressure. You have to be able to manage scenes and quite chaotic environments. And so a lot of the learning that I've brought into this performance environment, the sporting performance environment, comes from those practical experiences and my background in health science.
A real interesting one. It seems like it's quite common for lifeguards to get into the paramedic scene. I don't know if it's common, but funny enough is I did lifeguarding till early 20s, and I did pro when I was in my teens in the South Africa scene. You turn pro by the time you're about, I think, 15, you can turn pro there. I was asked at 14 because of my size. I was quite a lot taller and stronger from a swimming point of view. And then a lot of those people that did that till 17, 18, 19, 20, in that scene, a lot of my friends that I know went into that, the paramedic scene or that transitioned across. It seems like quite a common place to find yourself because you're so used to the intensity, the having to take the care, looking after the people, and you find yourself resonating really well in the paramedic scene.
Yeah, I think like if you're in that, if you're doing the surf lifeguarding, whatever, you're in there for a reason. That's because you want to challenge yourself, right? Mm. And doing that surf lifeguarding, you create this sort of base of understanding of how to deal with patients who have medical problems on the beach or in that environment. And then it's just it's a progression from that, getting into paramedicine or being a paramedic or a nurse or a doctor. Yeah. You're exposed to like that stress and pressure, and it's a challenging environment to work in.
So for yourself personally, is it the challenge that intrigues you, or is it the wanting to help, or a bit of both?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because people are often like, you got into this job to help people. And yeah, I did. That's a big reason why I wanted to obviously want to help people. But you can't help anyone unless you can help yourself, mm-hmm. and you can focus on your own self-betterment. So for me, a big part of it was exactly that. It's a challenge, right? Mm-hmm. There's this, you know, I went to Auckland Grammar just up the road here, and I was in one of the bottom classes. Yeah. The reason why I never went to university after school is because I thought I was dumb, right? And so coming into this at 29 years old to mm-hmm. start now doing a degree was a huge challenge for me. What I learned in the first year of that degree is that I had some form of dyslexia that was never picked up at school, mm-hmm. but one of the lecturers picked that up. She worked out that the way for me to learn was drawing diagrams. Okay. And so in all my exams, I was allowed to draw diagrams, right? Then I drew these very intricate diagrams, and I ended up getting A pluses through my degree.
Oh, amazing.
A's and A pluses, you know. And I was, for me, it was like, hey, man, I'm not dumb. I'm actually very smart.
Yeah.
Never thought I was dumb, but you know what I mean? Like
You couldn't correlate to...
I just didn't think I was academic. And so, yeah, I think everything in life is like about the challenge, right? Like if you're not challenging yourself, then how do you get better? How do you like... You know, the challenge is where all the good stuff is.
I totally agree with that. I know something that you've mentioned on a previous podcast you've done, talking about visualization, and I just want to go on a little bit this in this section, in the sense of there was a question asked by the host of, do you believe everyone actually visualizes their goals or things forward? And I think you mentioned that everyone does, whether you realize you do it or don't. It's actually you're always thinking ahead or thinking of something in front of you without realizing that's actually sort of your target that you're working towards.
Mm. I think like we live in the future, right? We either live in the past, we live in the future, and we've been spend very little time in the present. And thinking into the future is visualization. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that visualization is good. We can leverage it in a really good way. And sometimes it can be negative, right? Like mm-hmm. we're overthinking the future. I think where visualization is very powerful is where you put yourself in the moment and you sort of navigate your way through what you want that to look like, and that trains your nervous system. And, you know, a good example in real time of this is the goal kicker kicking the ball over the post, you know. Mm-hmm. He's looking at the ball, looking up at the post. He's just visualizing the ball going over the post, and he's visualizing his movement, and that's cueing the nervous system. We can tap into the stuff. Like some people really enjoy visualization. I do. Mm-hmm. Other people not so much in terms of sporting performance, but it's an incredibly powerful tool to tap into, but you have to understand the underlying mechanisms of why you're doing it.
100% on that one. Before we get into the four pillars around the bat, I just want to come back to the point you're talking about, you know, going to university, found out they had a form of dyslexia, and going through school, not realizing this, and which would have been a detriment to your education. I'm going to ask you a question, which I think a lot of people will like or don't like, but pretty much, do you think there's a bit of a mismatch in realizing at that stage in the education to realize that not everyone fits in the box? And because you don't fit in the box doesn't mean that you're not smart or smart or dumb, as you said, but actually there could be something else here that if we understood it better, might be benefit to the child to get their performance better, right? Like you said, as soon as someone realized there was a way your brain thought differently, this is how you did it, your performance was drastically improved from your smarts point of view compared to the way they saw it.
Humans have to, whenever you're doing something, you have to understand the underlying mechanisms. Otherwise, you can't apply the skill. Mm. So for me at school, I was in there doing maths and algebra and stuff. I didn't even understand. No one ever explained to me why I was doing that stuff. I had a maths coach. Mm. I did fifth form maths, failed, went back, got, I think it was 48%, went back. Got a tutor. My parents got me a tutor. We backed it a whole another year and got 46%. And look, I just wasn't engaged because I didn't understand mm-hmm. the why. We got to have to understand the why. And it's such, man, I just look back and I was like, why did no one? And the subjects I did really well in, like sport and rec and English, I had those teachers that explained the why.
Yeah.
And that's when I could get engaged in something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally. And I see a lot of that. I mean, today's culture, even from my own experience, my daughter was struggling in a specific type of education curriculum, which supported a certain way of educating and wouldn't go outside the box from that. And then we shifted and altered to another school that supported a different model of looking more to the child specifically to allow them to grow for the benefit of the child, not to the benefit of the curriculum. And straight away, within 6 to 9 months, the performance, without even pushing, literally the performance has just stepped up a whole full notch. And because it is a system that understood what is important or why they're doing it, as you said, and looking at the child, not looking at the box that they the whole system's put under.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such an interesting it's an interesting thing, right? I think it's changing. I think there's a lot of change going on now, but we are stuck, you know, whether it be, you know, how we teach kids at school or strength and we're stuck in this strength and conditioning training. We're stuck in this old paradigm, out this old way of doing things, and it's hard to, sometimes it's hard to change those patterns.
Totally. So bring it back over to integrated training. You know, you've got four pillars you talk about there, the performance, mental, movement, and recovery. Talk me through, I mean, each one of those of its own standalone pillar, but fundamentally I see it, and a lot of people don't realize, is you would need all four of those to be a stable, as you, in a real simple way, from a stable platform to build off, right? You need to go across all four of those successfully to build for, not just one. You know, everyone is like, I want to perform, I want to perform, I want to perform, not realizing there's the recovery, not realizing there's the mental side, right? We spoke about off air about mental health challenges and overcoming that and being open about that, not realizing that all of this plays its own part in progression of a individual, a performance sports star, and so forth.
Yeah, yeah, it's the way that I look at human beings, or someone that I'm working with or training, is just that they are made up of a whole lot of body systems, and all of those body systems are connected, right? So if there's an imbalance in one body system, it'll affect all body systems. Yep. And I think it's 12 body systems we're made of. And some of the key ones in terms of performance, health and performance, is your cardiovascular system, your muscular system, your nervous system, your digestive system, your breathing system, your respiratory system. And so what I do is I look at where people are putting time, energy, and focus. And what we see time and time again is the two systems given the least time, energy, and focus are what systems?
I want to say breathing.
Breathing's one of them.
Yeah, and mental.
Yeah, mental, your nervous system.
Yeah.
So very few people are investing time, energy, and focus into their breathing and into their nervous system. And we can balance and strengthen a nervous system.
Yeah.
We can balance and strengthen a breathing system or a respiratory system. These are two massive systems in terms of performance. And so if you get an athlete or just – we're not talking about athletes. We're all athletes. You know, if you're specialized, you're an athlete. If they're looking to optimize health and performance, and they often come and say, we're looking for the 1%, and they're not even training breathing, or they're not training to regulate their nervous system. And what I mean by that is their ability to shift from an energized into a calm state in real time and dynamic situations, then there's much more than 1% there. And integrated training, it's called integrated training because we look at the body in its entirety. And that's, I guess that's like the definition of holistic health, right? But holistic health. So yeah, I've sort of found this niche. Coming into this performance environment, I thought all this stuff would be entrenched in sporting teams and individual pursuits. And I was just absolutely staggered to find that it wasn't. Things like sleep hygiene, you know, the most potent form of recovery. These protocols that are easy to implement that have a massive effect into these body systems like your breathing and your nervous system are not part of, in general, are not part of the training schedule. And the two most important systems in order to remain calm under pressure, they're all important, but the two main important ones to optimize is your breathing system. Because that's how you can regulate stress and pressure in real time, and your nervous system. Because you're, you know, when you are stressed or you're under pressure, your nervous system is what we call shifts into what we call a sympathetic state, fight or flight. If you don't understand that, how can you leverage it in a way that you can control it? This is the stuff, by the way, that we should be teaching at school. Yeah. I learned all this stuff not in my degree. Yeah. They didn't teach it. You know, I came out of the degree onto the road, and I was confronted with very high-pressure situations, right, that I wasn't ready for, how you cannot be ready for that. And so I had to learn this stuff as I was going through it. And I would go to these jobs and get cognitively overloaded and feel overwhelmed, and I didn't understand it fully. Yeah. And so if you don't understand it, it, you know, stress and pressure and anxiety and mental health, and you're stuck in it, can be very scary place to be.
It is so true. Again, I grew up around sport, rugby, baseball back in South Africa, rep level, national level. My teams went to one of the best rugby schools in the world. They've just been ranked top 20 in the world. And there it was just performance. It was you play, you get to the best, you get to the best. I remember having a coach used to say to us, water makes you weak. you perform, and you understand this, right? You've seen the psychology, a lot of us, I can imagine. I'm not as close in the Auckland first 15 school senior, but I can imagine it's the same thing. Perform, perform, perform. That's all that the tick box cares about, right? Not everything that sits behind that. So being in that myself, I could now come in, growing up myself and looking back and going, understanding, yeah, there is the breathing is one of the biggest drastic ones I've noticed in a lot of areas. Kids don't understand the breathing, right? I'm not a breathing coach. I've never been coached, but I at least understand the whole benefits of nasal breathing over to mouth breathing. I'm happy that I do that. My family are nasal breathers, not mouth breathers. So I bring that into when I help coach young kids in sports as well, and then also bring that other side of it. It's, yes, it is to perform, but understanding the anxiety, the pressure, because fundamentally, without the other pillars controlled, performance is just going to fall off. Mm. Or the kid or the person is going to understand that, oh, I can perform to this level, but not realizing that they've actually got two or three steps further if they brought all those other things more into it and could actually give them that next step up.
Yeah, well... You know, if you think about our perception of resilience and strength and, you know, be stronger, be more resilient, it's all based around – a lot of it is all based around physical strength, right, and adapting physically. And, you know, the thing is, like, in New Zealand especially – the word mental health can often have a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. Like if you think of mental health, some people instantly think of, you know, crazy people or people that have diagnosed mental health problems. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that mental health is just strengthening this thing, you know, your mind and your ability to be more focused and think clearly and be creative and be able to be rational and have good reasoning and you can adapt that just like you can adapt the physical body, and the two are connected. The gateway through to your physical health is through your mental health, and the gateway through your mental health is through your physical health. And if you're not physically on point, it'll affect you mentally. If you're not mentally on point, it'll affect you physically. But, you know, what I'm seeing is that, especially in this performance, sporting performance environment, is that there's a lot of emphasis on the physical body and very little emphasis on the mental side of sport. But we all say it's all about the mental game, right? Yeah. Well, then... You know, do these teams and these individuals have a system and protocol for the most important thing they have, their mindset? You know, we have all these systems and protocols for a business or, you know, for all these things in life and very few systems and protocols for this thing. So part of the work we do is around, or I do is around establishing systems and protocols for that, and that has a massive ripple-on effect into every facet of performance and health.
So true again. You know, like you said, it's a mental game. But no one cares about the mental side, right? From it's more focused on the performance. I used to see this a lot in the bodybuilding scene or the muscle, the weightlifting scene. Of everyone goes, hey, it's about the gym. Where the people that actually understand it understand the gym is part of it, but it's actually about the kitchen. There was a saying I heard from multiple people that six packs aren't made in the gym; they're made in the kitchen. And people couldn't really understand it, but people understand it, know that. That is where fundamentally is almost more importance needs to be put and built bigger around that compared to the weights lifting. And that's where from your, you know, the mental health, physical and the rest of it.
But one thing. I think like we even just need a definition, you know, we're in the middle of a mental health crisis in New Zealand. What is our definition of mental health? What is our definition of mental health and what does that look like? Because, yeah, I think our perception of mental health is very warped. And I talk about mental health just like I talk about my physical health, and I invest in my own mental health every single day. We all do to some degree, right? But yeah, it's just that as a country, we've got to get the language right around this stuff.
And again, the big thing about that is the telling people it's fine, it's okay, we need to look after it. Ask for help, speak out, and the rest of it. It's just again, it is such a challenge and problem in New Zealand, but we're all trying to resolve everything down the line, right? We try. Unfortunately, you know, the ambulance is too late. It's what are we doing at the earlier part of the game to and trying to benefit that people have those rule sets and education and know where they can go and how to control their own situations around their mental health and so forth.
Yeah, there's people that through their circumstances don't have control of this stuff, right? Like that they have through lack of being able to be in control of their own circumstances, whether that be that they're brought up in a family environment that was violent or whatever they've been exposed to. You know, these people need help, right? These are the people that really need the help. And then there's another cross-section of people that need to take the onus on themselves and take radical ownership of their own health.
Yeah.
And that's a big – I think that's like a massive issue, is that we're not taking radical ownership of our own health. We're relying on other people.
Mm-hmm.
We need those people, a certain cross group of the population. They need those people, but for the large majority, we've got to take the onus on ourselves. Because everything that's set up nowadays is set up to go, you know, a lot of it is set up to go against our own personal health and self-betterment, whether it be, you know, complacent adaptation or just the stress that we're under the day-to-day. You know, we're so busy, the mortgage, the family, the work. And so we've really got to take charge of it ourselves, because if you wait for someone to help you, you're going to be waiting a long time.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate, right? And that's... We need them to take control, but also, unfortunately, the system is a little bit is behind.
Well, system's overwhelmed.
Yeah, overwhelmed. So,
system's overwhelmed because people aren't looking after themselves.
Yeah.
And we have a massive problem with lifestyle disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, metabolic syndrome, all these things that are preventable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the information is out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The onus is on the person to make sustainable, substantial change.
Yeah, totally. I want to bring it back to the moment I saw you, 259, 263, I can't remember which video it was, and you guys doing the calmness under pressure session, the whole swimming pool thing.
Yeah.
That the session, I don't want to say thing, to play it out as if it's something small. Anyone that's listening or watching at the moment, go over to the website and have a look. There's a whole lot of YouTube videos of you doing this calmness under pressure sessions. Talk me through the session itself and the benefits and what you're trying to achieve there, because I looked at it, and for some reason, out of all the training, the guys running the sand dunes, the guys in PR and the road, this 2 or 3 minute part of the video on the UFC pre-fight video series was intrigued me more than anything else, because I was quite intrigued around everything that was in play that a novice looking in couldn't understand. But to me, it looked like there were so many moving parts that would have just benefited all those sports stars from this one session.
Mm. I think, like, for me, there has to be an understanding that all of these people that are coming to train have subconscious patterns of behavior, patterns that they're not even aware of consciously. And those subconscious patterns come from traumatic events in your life, your early childhood or growing up. And we establish, when a traumatic event happens, we establish these safety barriers, right? And they're good in the acute phase. And the problem is that we often hold on to that outside of that acute phase, and that ends up becoming a subconscious pattern. I mean, you can identify them in yourself if you go back and you sit down and you actually think about it. And those subconscious patterns will always come out in high-pressure, high-stress situations. And so part of the pool training is really to identify patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see those patterns – those patterns of behavior, those subconscious patterns of behavior, when you're in that high pressure, high stress situation. And the problem is you have to take the people or the athletes outside, or the people you're working with outside of the environment that they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Because over time, they have adapted to that. And actually going into the ring in front of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people, they become used to, right?
Yep.
And they adapt coping mechanisms around how to deal with that, but it's more about like the life stuff, and the life stuff will come out in these if you elicit stress and pressure. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to identify, is these patterns, and you can see them in the pool. So that's one side of it.
Yeah.
And then unraveling that. And then the other side of it is learning how to leverage stress and pressure in real time. So how to shift from an energized into a relaxed state, and how to do that really quickly.
Yep.
So an example is when you're under the water, the stress comes in pretty thick and fast, because there's air hunger.
Yeah.
And we have protocols that they work on when that air hunger comes in to negate the stress and pressure. That's called top-down control, because underneath the water you only really have access to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so using your mind to create a more calm state. And then when you come up out of the water, You have the benefit of both top-down control using your mind to control stress, but also bottom-up control, tapping into these intricate body systems that are designed to regulate stress and pressure. Your breathing, for example, you're breathing through conscious control of your breathing. It's really the fastest way to shift from an energized into a relaxed state. And what I mean by that is from a sympathetic state, fight or flight, into a parasympathetic state, the part of your division of your nervous system that is calming. And to be able to do that quickly means that you're able to drop your heart rate faster, your blood pressure faster, your breathing rate, and you're able to recover faster. So it's all about, you know, managing energy output. And then we'll have certain themes that we work on in the pool. They can be they're different every week.
Yeah.
And depending on the person you have in the pool, you might target that theme towards them. Yeah. And then the other part of the breathing training is really breathing development, like getting them better breathing mechanics. Like, you can hide all the training in the pool, or you can sit them in front of a board and try to get them to understand all this stuff. They'll probably switch off pretty quickly. Or you can have a combination of getting them to understand the underlying mechanisms, but in the practical setting, teasing all this stuff out and debriefing it. And and then there's a lot of parts to it, but the other part of the pool training is really about recovery. And using the pool to elicit a real calm state. So that's that, like, where you see them floating just meditation, basically. Even being under the pool is very meditative. We have certain protocols where they never shift into the difficult phase of the breath hold. It's just all underwater and it's relatively easy. And then they come up, they recalibrate, and they go again. It's just like 20 minutes of meditation in your own little world under the water.
I told you there's so much more to it than this. And that's why when I looked at it, I was like, I can see – like, anyone watching, it looks like a guy's just having a couple of sessions, but I could just see that there was so much more, like you said, the different layers of it, the breathing, the calmness, understanding how to control themselves. And I think the big thing from that was seeing not just that when you guys do the PR sessions with the crew, and seeing, I know you've been with City Kickboxing for quite a while, and a big thing to play is obviously with Israel, with Izzy and his performance is, can't remember for his last one, how he went through the whole fight without ever opening his mouth, just breathing through the nose. One of the best of the modern generation, and almost been at calm at all times. I want to say a lot of that could be to you. A lot of it's to Izzy. I mean, the man works harder than most. I've seen a lot from the content that I can see out there. He's always first. He's always pushing the most extreme. When it's heel runs, I think he's always first up the hill. Or when it's under the water, he's always pushing to be the last one popping out. But that's where a lot of this comes into play, to show what that can be. But the one thing that when I was looking through content this week, as I always do with my guests, I make sure I do a bit of research and watching is.
Don't research. Don't go too deep.
But with Israel specifically is when you're pushing him at the beach and he's going, okay, cool, under the water as long as possible. And a lot of the crew, the guys will come up at the point of where it's extreme. They can't last long. But they would get up of the water, and most of us would get out of the water and go, oh, God, I'm going to die. And these guys would pop up and literally just be within like 2 or 3 seconds, like you said, they'd be back to the calm, walking out, get into what needs to be next, or go in and doing a moment of getting their body under control. But there was no extreme between the first action and the second action. It was all sort of almost like boring per se, but everything's fully under control.
Yeah. That's a lot of that is just – around awareness alone. So the patterns that you obviously, like, the brain just recognizes patterns, right? So the patterns you train when you're under the fatigue will be the same patterns when you're in fatigue in the ring or on the field or in the, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. And so what is really important is when you're under stress and pressure to not let that skill level or your awareness of what you're doing lag. And that's so when they come up, it's easy to and go back into that pattern, because that's what subconsciously you've always done or seems natural to do. But it's much more difficult to maintain control and composure, and actually it's a choice once you understand it and you know what that looks like. It becomes a choice, but it has to be a conscious choice. So you have to be really aware of what you're doing. And you also have to be aware of the detrimental effects of training those patterns, those fatigue, you know, what happens when you're fatigued, training those patterns and replicating them day in and day out, because that's all you're doing, you're training a pattern. That's why the breathing's so powerful, because once you have like really good awareness of your breathing and you have really good breathing mechanics and you've worked on it and you understand it, you almost won't sacrifice your breathing. I'll give you an example, like the guys on the air bike, and you see them in that high intensity state flopping around on the air bike, and they've lost all form, right? And you can't flop around like that and breathe efficiently. And the ones that you see that do the breathing training, they don't sacrifice form, because then they'll sacrifice their breathing. And breathing is like everything, you know. Once you lose control of your breathing, it has massive ripple on effects.
Yeah. Can I just say, stuff the air bike. I hate that bloody thing. Anyone that's ever climbed on one knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's the worst machine that's ever been invented in the world.
Yeah, I say that. I don't think I've ever been on an air bike, so I'd probably be flopping around.
They're amazing but horrible, because they're literally at 100% threshold the minute you climb onto to the minute you climb off.
Yeah.
But it's going back to one more thing before we round up the show for today is, do you still see – obviously, a lot of what you're coaching is, you know, guys will come in and go, great, I want to get the performance and the rest of it. But a lot of it is talking about listening to your own body. So you're talking with top down or bottom up. And do you still find challenges from some guys or girls that come in there? And I know there was a scene that we talk, they can see online, where you had the boys on the beach lying there thinking inside their body, taking out the stress and the anxiety from the areas that needed to be removed and stuff. And to some people, they might look in and go, that's a bit hippie for me. That's a little bit 60s vibe, you know, that whole thing. You still see a bit of that challenge with people coming into now going, cool, show me how to be the best, but I'm not going to sit and think about my mind and my inside body, because that's just not, you know, that's not manly or cool enough, right?
Get with the times, people. Get with the times. We know now, based on very clear research and science, that the stuff is incredibly potent. The reason why some people avoid it is because if you stop and reflect internally, a lot of people don't like what they see. It's quite confronting, right? That's the deep work. That's that work you have to do to, you know, unravel some of the stuff that's going on in your life. And I think people view it as hippie stuff because there is a lot of that. That there's a lot of nonsense out there, right? Like, you just have to jump on social media and, you know, what we're trying to do, or what I'm trying to do, is bring performance terminology to this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what are we actually doing when we sit down and we do these bouts of focus work where we're focusing on the breathing or, we're learning to regulate our nervous system. Mm-hmm. You know, that body system that's just sitting there, just waiting to be optimized. And then when you can understand that's all about your energy output, and that's all about improving focus and creativity and being able to sustain that focus under pressure, it becomes an absolute must in terms of health and performance, not just for like these athletes and that, it's for everybody. Now, this stuff is like, I think when we're stuck in this pattern of like stress and anxiety, and there's all this stuff going on in our lives, it gets very complicated, right? And we start looking for complicated solutions to simple problems. And the simple problem is we're just too busy. This thing here is agitated. And we've just got to stop, slow down, what I call the foundations. These are like, you know, this meditative work is like the foundations of strength and conditioning.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you're talking about the social media side of things and seeing that there's all these different items out there and to resolve. One thing I know with yourself and your training specifically to what you're trying to give to people out there, you understand that there's individual people that have different individual needs and requirements and performance benefits. There's obviously a crew that will come in, like City Kickboxing, and they have a set need and things we build bespoke on your foundation of your fundamentals and your pillars, but bespoke to their requirement and needs, compared to where, unfortunately, we've seen the wider social media world going, hey, here's a solution. You take it. You're all going to get the same performance, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone takes this vanilla ice cream and everyone thinks it's going to change their lives. And I think that's one of the challenges we also see out there at the moment of going, oh, there's one fix for everyone, where that's really unrealistic.
Yeah. There's that saying, like, we're all on a journey, right? But some people aren't. Some people don't want to go on that journey of like self-betterment and self-improvement because they're, you know, it requires like a yeah, that's that whole thing of like reflecting and just stopping. And we mm-hmm. keep ourselves so busy, and most of the time it's because we're avoiding something, right? Yeah. We're avoiding dealing with the stuff that's gone on in our lives or that's happened in our lives. And, you know, I know for myself, like a big part of like improving my mental health was just going on this journey, and it's not a linear process. Mm-hmm. Like you've been through your own journey. It's not a linear process, yeah. right? Like we do need these people, mm-hmm. these people that are qualified to help. They're so important in this journey, but we also need to find our own way and really be willing to explore and have setbacks in this journey. And that's what it's all about. But yeah, I think a lot of people avoid it because it really exposes them. And they'd prefer just to keep themselves ridiculously busy so they don't have to confront it.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Before we end off the show today, is there anything you want to leave the audience, the people that are watching or listening with today, just a thought from your side?
Yeah, the biggest thing is like invest in your own physical and mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, we often make decisions based on monetary gain or, you know, gaining something, whether it be like a car, a new couch, or whatever. If you're ever going to make, if you're making decisions, make them based on your physical and mental health, because mm-hmm. that's the most important thing you can invest in. If you only had one car, you know, imagine if you only had one car for the rest of your life, you would keep that car in mm-hmm. meticulous condition, right? You'd keep the tyres pumped up, you'd keep it clean, you'd look after it, water and oil and all the rest of it. Well, you've only got one body. So I think as like with this mental health crisis that we're in, I think we can call it a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. you've really got to take that radical ownership of your own mental and physical health and start, you know, going on your own journey of exploring the stuff and finding out what works for you and realizing that you need to reach out and find those, put those people around you that can help, whether it be friends, family, or, you know, the health professionals that are there. But it's also taking that onus on yourself.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. And last question, where can people find you if they're interested to learn more about you, the brand, or anything else?
Yeah, the website wmw.co.nz. Instagram is integrated_training. Mm-hmm. And those are the two right. best places. We'll come out to Piha. I'll be out there surfing or running on the beach or something like that.
Oh, just funny to mention is I grew up on the beach myself. I live out in Waimaku, so I'm, you know, close to Mirawai. A lot of people either love or hate Mirawai, right? But I make sure I take my kids down there to get in the surf, because I believe if I can get my kids to understand that surf, survive in that surf, they can go anywhere in any beach and be safe around water, right? And that's when we went out just camping just a couple of weeks ago. We went to a place and the water was a bit rough. My kids were just having a ball of their life, and the other kids around were like, oh my goodness, we're getting thumped and a bit scared and a bit worried. Again, a bit of calmness because I've put them in the extreme situation. But let's just say the wife will never come down with me to the beach because she hates me taking the kids into the Mirawai surf, which you'll be well aware of is not the most pleasant unless you are well-versed on how it reacts, right?
Yeah, man, that's how kids learn, eh? That's how we learn. You just
throw them in there, right?
And sort it out. But yeah, I really appreciate you inviting me on here and having this discussion.
Awesome.
And hopefully people will listen to it and take something from it. And I think like one of the questions I most often get asked is like around, because I work with a lot of people that have anxiety or chronic stress, and it's, you know, how do we get out of this state of chronic stress and anxiety? And actually the easiest, the best answer to that is to invest in the pillars of health. And we all know what the pillars of health are, and it's actually real basic stuff. Yeah. Yeah, don't look for convoluted solutions to simple problems. Mm-hmm. Invest in the five pillars of health.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Dave. And as always, to everyone else, thanks again for coming over to the Wolf of Queen Street podcast. As I always say at the end of the show, is I'm not interested to shout out to say, hey, like or share or subscribe to the show. That's not what is important to me. What is important to me is if something you heard today resonated with yourself, if there was a message or part that you could take that someone else might care about or might make a difference in their life, just reach out to them and say, hey, here's something that might be good for you. Specifically around your mental health, health overall from today's episode, but also in the time that we live across now at the moment in society, New Zealand, across the world, just reach out to people, say hi, how are you doing, and see and touch base with people. That's all I care about fundamentally from the end of this. But as always, stay beautiful, stay powerful. Until next time, see ya.
Like and share.